Yeah, I got to set the scene here as we talk baseball in the early 50s this afternoon. As we welcome back to the program, our friend Jim Halloran, author of Baseball in America. Jim, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing good, Rich. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. We had a great time talking with you about the memorable 1967 pennant race a couple of years ago, but this time we want to go back to one of the earliest seasons you've researched and arguably one of the most memorable seasons in all of baseball history.
Right. What I want you to do is I want you to hop in my little time machine here, and we'll go back 69 years to 1951. More specifically, we're going to go back to August 12, 1951. In the National League, the Dodger fans were ecstatic. Their team is holding a 13.5 game lead. The only teams barely even reaching 500 level are the Giants and the Cardinals. But very unexpectedly, the Giants won 16 games in a row. That allowed them to finish the season 39-8, and they tied the Dodgers on the last game of the season. This, of course, set up a three-game playoff series. Game one, Giants. Game two, Dodgers. The home team crowd at the Polo Grounds were feeling desperate as the Brooklynites took a 4-2 lead in the bottom of the ninth. With one out, runners on second and third, Giants outfielder Bobby Thompson strolled to the plate. Dodger manager Charlie Dressen made that critical decision to pitch to Thompson. He had a base empty because both runners were second and third, and he could have walked them. But instead, he decided that he would pitch to him instead of facing a rookie named Willie Mays. So he called the bullpen. He called in Mr. Dependability at the time, Ralph Frunk, to replace Don Newcomb, his ace pitcher, who had pitched a very good game at that point. At the time, it didn't seem to be a bad decision considering the circumstance, except for the fact that Thompson had hit a game-winning home run in the first playoff game off of Bronco. One ball, no strike count. Thompson lashed the ball over the left field fence for the game winner. There was probably no one in the Polo Grounds that day more excited than the announcer, Russ Hodges, who famously started screaming, "The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant."
Well, Jim, let's go back and listen to that call from Russ Hodges. We've got it right here.
Now it's a 4-2 ball game in favor of Brooklyn, but the Giants have the tying run at second base. And Thompson is the hit next.
There you go. That's what it sounded like 69 autumns ago.
That's great. You know, and it's called the shot heard around the world. And a magnificent historic moment in baseball. And a little side note to that is that Bronco and Thompson became pretty good friends. And after their retirement, they joined the banquet tour and retold their story hundreds of times, the baseball fans.
Yeah, well, you know, we had Ralph Branca on the show a few years ago, and they had become friends, but he was also a little upset when he found out that the pitch had been tipped, and Bobby Thompson knew what was coming and didn't tell Ralph Branca that until several years later.
That's right. I have heard that story, too. Well, what a way to start the 1950s, and the 50s really were a golden era of baseball. But we look around the National League that year. This is the year the Giants welcomed Rookie of the Year, Willie Sahay Mays, to Major League. He joined outfielders Monty Irvin and Bobby Thompson to form a lethal outfield. Pitchers Sal, the Barber Magley, and Larry Johnson each won 23 games. You know, once again, nicknames. I love nicknames in baseball. And it was the Barber Magley. And Sal was a real gritty-looking guy, and he threw high and tight to the batters, a close shave for any batter at the plate, and that's where he got his nickname. In addition to that, they had a fiery Leo DeRosa was the manager. And of course, they're playing up against the Dodgers, who were now putting together the nucleus of that rather historic roster that included Hall of Fame shortstop, Pee Wee Reese, center fielder, Hall of Famer, Duke Snider, Hall of Famer, Jackie Robinson, most valuable player of 51, and Hall of Famer, Roy Campanella, and first baseman, Gil Hodges. They had 20-game winner in Don Newcomb and a 22-game winner in Preacher Lowe. So they had a pretty good piece of pitching squad, too. And I'll bet you are familiar with the book Boys of Summer.
Oh, absolutely. That's a must-have for any longtime baseball fan.
Yeah. Roger Kahn, in 1972, wrote The Boys of Summer, and it gives you such tremendous insight into baseball in the 1950s and zeroes in on those Dodgers and all about their background. Some of them not the big names, but it gives you great insight into that era of baseball. So.
One
of my favorites, that's for sure.
In the American League that year, you mentioned the great rookie Willie Mays, but a pretty good rookie broke in for another New York team that season as well in the American League.
Yeah, right across the river was, not across the river, they're both on Manhattan, Mickey Mantle. Mantle came up. Mantle struggled a little bit. And he got sent back down after he was up for a month or so. But he came back, and last half of the season, he contributed a lot to that team. And he was, of course, the heir to Joe DiMaggio, and that was Joe's last year, was 1951. So they played in the World Series. DiMaggio bowed out. Mantle came in. I have a personal story. I think you were talking about, I wanted to talk last about 67, how you started following baseball. In 1951, I was a little tiny kid, and I'm running through my house, and my father is a big Joe DiMaggio fan, and he stopped me. He said, "Jimmy, you sit down here and watch this. You just watch this man bat. It's his last time up to bat, and his name is Joe DiMaggio." And you know what? DiMaggio struck out, and I walked out of the house thinking, "Oh, big deal." That was my very first baseball memory.
Wow. It's a great story.
Well, the Cardinals, they were third place. Cardinals, they were led by three future Hall of Famers, Sandman, Musial, the redhead, Red Shandens, and outfielder Enos Slaughter. Your fourth place Boston Braves still had pitchers Warren Spahn and his sidekick Johnny Saint. And you may remember the poems, Spahn and Sane and Pray for Rain.
Oh, yes.
But this year, Sane was not the same, and the team was drifting downwards. Matter of fact, Sane got sold over to the Yankees towards the end of the season for $50,000. Second division teams, they all had their problems, of course, particularly the 1951 Phillies. And they had won the pennant in 1950 with the Whiz Kids. And they were expected to win it again. And they still received good output from two youngsters, pitcher Robin Roberts, who recorded the second of his six consecutive 20-game winning seasons, and center fielder Richie Ashburn, who batted .343. But 1950 MVP pitcher Jim Constanti tailed off, as did outfielders Dell Ennis, infielders Grady Hamner, and third baseman Pudd'nhead Jones. I say Pudd'nhead because talking about nicknames, that's one of my favorites.
Oh, that's a great one.
And people say, how did he get the name Pudd'nhead? And the story goes that he was brought up down the Appalachian Mountains. And as a child, there was a popular song called Pudd'nhead. And as a little boy, he would dance around the porch and everything and make a big deal about when they played that song. So they labeled him as Pudd'nhead and stayed with him his entire life.
I love it. We're talking with Jim Halloran here about the 1951 baseball season. Fill us in on the American League. That was a pretty good pennant race that year between the Yankees and the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, the Yanks took that by five games. It was a little bit closer than five games. They had to pick it up a little bit towards the end and made a little bit of a comeback before they had a tough pitching staff. Allie Reynolds and Vic Rashi and Ed Lopat, and a new guy called Whitey Ford was on that team, too.
And you mentioned Allie Reynolds. He had two no-hitters in that season.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. He won 21 games. I mean, they had a great pitching staff. And they had third baseman Gil McDougall. He was the AL Rookie of the Year that year. And, of course, Mantle didn't set the world on fire, But he did have a good last 60 games or so. And then in the World Series, the story goes that he had to give way for DiMaggio to catch a ball out in left field. And by giving way for DiMaggio to catch it, he hit something out there in the turf that hurt his knee that bothered him for the rest of his career.
Right.
But the rest of the National League, that National League, I want to mention a couple things that we did. Do you remember Ted Kluszewski?
Oh, Big Clue, absolutely. Cincinnati Reds, yeah.
Big Clue, he was featured for his muscular arms and sleeveless jersey. They were six. The Pirates, they had never had anything outside of Ralph Kleiner the entire decade. And, of course, last place almost every year, the Cubs. And they were counting on old Hank Sauer, who was 18, his 30 home run. But, they did have a first baseman. So although he was never panned out as a ball player, a lot of your listeners became to know him better as the rifle man on the long range.
Talking about Chuck Connors, right?
Chuck Connors, yeah, exactly. So it was a great year. The World Series, the Giants, they didn't carry the momentum too much in the World Series. And Reynolds, Rashi, Lopez pretty much limited the Giants to less than 2 runs per game. And the Yanks won 4-2.
Well, it's a great season.
It was a good year. It was the start of a good era. Like I said, that 1950s, there was a lot of New York in it.
Mm.
But we had some rather historic times, and the country was at peace, and, baseball was at that point, no doubt about it, still America's favorite sport.
Definitely. Well, it's fun to look back. 1951, a memorable season indeed. Hey, Jim, we appreciate it, as always. Thanks for visiting with us, and we'll do it again down the road and pick out another fun year to look back on in Major League history.
It's always a pleasure, Rich. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, Jim. Jim Halloran, author of Baseball in America here on Downtown.